540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Stacey Lynn. Protests near the Israeli embassy in Amman after an airstrike hit a Gaza hospital this morning. Palestinian officials say Israel is to blame. The IDF denies the claim, pointing to Hamas. This all comes as President Biden is on his way to Israel for meetings, one of which isn't happening now. Here's CBS's Margaret Brennan.
The summit between President Biden and Arab leaders, including Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, was called off after the tragic bombing of a hospital in Gaza. Images of the civilian casualties sparked protests in multiple cities across multiple Arab countries.
Correspondent Charlie Daggett is in Tel Aviv and tells us the country's preparing for a ground invasion.
For days, Israeli troops, heavy weapons, tanks, and artillery have been taking up positions along the front line with Gaza. The Israeli Defense Forces say they've mobilized more than 300,000 troops as the military gears up for what it calls a coordinated attack from air, land, and sea, indicating an all-out invasion may be imminent. President Biden's visit may mean Israel may hold off until he's left the region.
The president says he'll be there to show support for the country while also pressing for ways to ease humanitarian suffering in Gaza. Back in Washington, the House is still without a speaker. Republicans failed to elect Representative Jim Jordan.
We're going to keep working, and we're going to get to the votes.
He's going to try again tomorrow, but today every Democrat and 20 Republicans voted against him. A manhunt is underway in Georgia for four inmates who escaped from a county jail. Bibb County Sheriff David Davis says they believe someone on the outside helped them.
These inmates were able to leave out from a day room window and run out through a break in the fence.
One of the escapees was accused of murder. The others are facing assault and drug trafficking charges. Well, look out for fake glowing reviews. Technology contributor Ian Schur.
Unfortunately, paid for reviews have become a big business across the internet. And it's not that hard to see why. When people buy products from places like Amazon, oftentimes they'll get a card in the box offering them either another free product or cash back in return for review.
Some travel and online shopping sites are now teaming up to fight back. They're launching the Coalition for Trusted Reviews. Federal regulators have also been aiming to crack down on the issue. This is CBS News.
You need to hire? Indeed is with you every step of the way, helping you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Wattles. It was a one-car accident in Waukesha County Sunday that resulted in the loss of Arrowhead's legendary high school football coach. The Waukesha County Sheriff's Office is still gathering details about the crash in Merton, in which Tom Taraska's car slammed into a tree. The 71-year-old was one of Wisconsin's most successful high school football coaches, leading Arrowhead to four state championships and five additional title game appearances. The person from Milwaukee who worked in Waukesha County and was infected with measles is recovering and is no longer contagious. The Milwaukee Health Department says efforts are underway to determine the source of the infection and to track potential spread. While there are no additional confirmed cases, suspected cases are being monitored. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Wattles.
Have you noticed bad behavior has become normalized at interscholastic athletic events? Some fans seem angry. They lack civility toward one another. Some even get aggressive and unruly. Time out! What is going on? This has to stop. Let's not forget, school sports aren't just about winning. And they're definitely not an excuse to take your frustrations out on the official or the opponent. They're about teaching lessons, like perseverance, respect, and empathy so students can learn and grow as people, not just as players. We all have a role to play in setting a good example for our students and teaching them these important values. So fans, it's time to step up your game and behave positively at Interscholastic Athletic Events in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
These stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the tour as we continue across the state of Pennsylvania. Again, as we've been saying, look, you know, the reality is the stronger we can be together, the better things will be in the future. And I point to Bernie Sanders, who said, when we stand together, there's nothing that can stop us. Solidarity is an unbelievable concept. And, you know, again, taking some of those old concepts, making them new again, and moving us in a positive direction. And one of the people who does that probably better than anybody that I know is my next guest, sir. Nelson is the chief cook and bottle washer, the president of the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. I'm super happy to be here and super excited to start out talking about solidarity. Bernie's quote is a lot like what I say all the time. Solidarity is a force stronger than gravity. It lifts us up. And if we truly practice solidarity, you know, the corporate elite have control and they have money, but we have the power. And so when we practice solidarity and exercise that power, we can take control. And that's what we have to do here. And that's what I've been out actually talking with Bernie Sanders about in three different locations, including Philadelphia.
Now, you know, you say it much more eloquently than I do. I say they have all the money, we've out-procreated them. If only we could come together, maybe we would do better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are the working class, and the working class used to be defined mostly as white men. But we know that that's not true. We know that actually racism and sexism have been the premier tactics of the boss to divide us. And we have incredible leadership coming out of all areas of the working class. And the reality is that we are 99% of this country, and we create all of the value, all of the wealth. And when we come together and understand that we have much more in common than anything that can divide us, we're actually going to make a difference. I love that you're in Pennsylvania, and I just want to tell you a little anecdote about this. You know, our union is a craft union. Although we are very cognizant of the fact that we are part of the labor movement and that we have a real responsibility actually to be at the leading edge of the labor movement, because people need to see that unions are for everyone. And we actually do represent a lot of diversity here in our union. And we have almost more public contact than any other profession with decision makers on our planes too. So we have the responsibility of sharing the message of unions, the power of unions, with 80% of us organized and an organizing campaign at Delta, the last major airline without a union for flight attendants. We have the ability to spread this message everywhere, all over the country and around the world. And in Pennsylvania, you know, this is the things that flight attendants are fighting for. We're fighting every single time we go to the table not to have to pay more in healthcare premiums, not to have to have worsened coverage, not to have to scrimp and save in other ways for a retirement, but have a secure retirement plan and enough wages to have a living wage to live near where we work. We have a lot of problems like other workers that it's incredibly expensive for us to even get to work because we can't afford to live where we are based. These are problems that are systemic to the entire nation and the world. And we're also seeing the effects of climate change today. We're seeing more and more weather events, more and more disrupted flights, more disruption when there's a major disaster of infrastructure of airports. And we work a lot of relief flights to try to get help to people after these events have occur. We also have training in human trafficking and recognizing human trafficking on our planes. What is the leading cause of human trafficking? Well, it's the climate disaster. It's making people migrants because of these climate disasters. And when people are in a desperate situation like that, they are more likely to be trafficked and to be used for sex or labor by force. So these are all issues that are right in our workplace. And in Pennsylvania, I think about the fact that we used to have our second largest council in our union in Pittsburgh. And today, since the passage of NAFTA and the outsourcing of our jobs and our manufacturing, we barely have any flights to Pittsburgh. You can barely get service there anymore. And there's certainly no flight attendant bases there. So that uprooted a whole bunch of people that seemingly had nothing to do with our jobs, except that our work and the policies that our government passes are totally related. We're all affected by it. So what you're doing out there, having these conversations with people who feel like they've been forgotten, who feel like they are not considered in the political process, and they're not because money has taken over our political process. If we help them understand that we want to talk about their issues and we want to lift those up, and if they engage in that, join unions, join in the political process, we actually have the power to change it.
Now, I like how you brought all of this all together. I mean, you know, the fact that, you know, Pittsburgh was a manufacturing hub, you know, had a vibrant economy, and then, you know, how that, you know, transitioned into other jobs and you know, all that that came to it. And this is where I think in this moment, having these conversations has the ability to bring us back together. I mean, we're told we're, you know, a country that's divided. We are, you know, we bought the red hat or the blue hat. For me, what I'm hoping comes out of this is a bunch of conversations that say, hey, you know what? We do have a lot of common interests. And a lot of it comes back down to, you know, wages, hours, conditions.
People like to talk about political parties as another way to divide the country, like you said. And certainly politicians are using it as a means to divide the country. But the fact of the matter is that when the working class makes politicians focus on our issues, it doesn't matter which party they came from. We are naturally going to form the Working People's Party because the parties will be responsive to us when we exercise our power. But the only way that we can exercise our power is by understanding that we have a common cause, defining those demands together, and making a commitment to each other to fight for them.
But what do you say to the people who go, you know, because I've been saying, look, we're at a crossroads in this moment. I know in this state of Pennsylvania, the state where I live, there's a guy running for governor who, you know, we get the wrong guy. Labor rights in this country are set back, you know, 100 years. What do you say to the people who say, you know, like me, who say we're kind of at a crossroads moment here?
Yeah, I mean, it's very clear. So it didn't used to be very clear between the two parties. Let's be really clear. There is one party that wants to destroy all of our rights, wants to declare this a Christian nation only, wants to move to a dictatorship. And we're on our way to fascism. We're gonna ban books that talk about women being able to code. I mean, this is where we're headed. So the choices are very clear here. Now, I think that there's probably some exceptions in Pennsylvania. For example, Brian Fitzpatrick, who is a Republican, but has voted several times with the Democrats. So we got to be clear about that. And unions can be clear about things like that. But on the whole, the GOP is totally against working people's rights. They're against humanity. They're against any kind of differences whatsoever at all. They're totally against women. So it's crystal clear. you know, which party is creating more of a platform for working people to actually step up. Now, I'm not praising the Democrats right now, okay? Because they have a long ways to go. We have to make them go a hell of a lot farther. But it's very clear that one party still believes in some kind of democracy here, and the other party is looking to destroy it. So the choices are clear. And when we listen to our unions, we can actually get good information about people's records. You know, Ted Cruz was out there the other day, absolutely beating his chest over the infrastructure that was going to be built in Texas and trying to take credit for that. He called it a bipartisan deal. Yeah, it was a bipartisan deal because a handful of people like Brian Fitzpatrick voted for it, but he didn't vote for it. And neither did a single Republican in the Senate. So they're hypocritical. They're totally full of shit. And if you, you know, plug into your union, you can actually get good information rather than looking to the cable news centers. Or guess what? They can tune into your show where you're going to get the real story about the working class, which is why, frankly, AFA is a sponsor of your show, The Rick Smith Show, and why also we haven't talked about this yet, but I want you to send me an invoice for this tour that you're going on, because AFA wants to be a sponsor of that too.
I appreciate it, and because I think this tour is hopefully going to be able to get us back to having conversations again. Instead of, you know, we bought the hats, we've got our, I'm on my team, I'm on your team, and start talking about how we make lives better, how we move forward. And look, I think, you know, for all the talk of what's going on with the Biden administration, I think they're moving us in a direction that could be helpful. Reshoring manufacturing, investing in infrastructure, as you pointed out, even though the Republicans haven't come along. And I think having those conversations, pointing out the reality, maybe we get a Republican Party that comes back to the sane line. Maybe we get a Democratic Party that's going to be much more positive on working class issues. Maybe once we go to the ballot box, maybe we make things better.
We make things better. I mean, that's the fundamental issue. And I hope that along the way, actually, if you're running into strike lines, I hope you have some conversations there too, because where do we have these conversations? People who think that they were maybe at odds with each other, maybe didn't talk with each other at work because they didn't think they had anything in common. Because let's face it, the boss chooses who goes into the workplace. We don't choose that, right? But when it's time to fight the boss and define what it is that we want to achieve, typically, our demands are right in line with each other. And then that sends us out onto the picket line, whether that's starting with informational picketing and strike votes and making it very clear what we're willing to do, or actually having to withhold our labor and go out on strike. In either case, you have people coming together who otherwise might not, and having real conversations about what matters to us and our families. And those are the kind of conversations that you're going to inspire. I think Democrats need to understand and started to understand a little bit that having conversations out on the picket line is a good thing to do. And that actually unions get results when in Washington, we really do have money controlling our politics. So these big, you know, very popular ideas like healthcare for all can't get passed, can't get the time of day, can't even get any time in any discussion because money is controlling our politics. And that doesn't mean that that's the individuals in those representation positions. It means that money has control over the political process. And we have to counterbalance that. We can overtake it if we use our numbers.
No, you're absolutely right. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Sarah Nelson, president of the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA. Check out their website, AFACWA.org. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. But you know, you brought up something interesting there, because I go back to election night 2020, while everyone was watching the election results and everyone was trying to figure out who was going to win or lose, I was leading a strike, you know, just not too far from where I live, of 55 workers, three quarters of which voted for Donald Trump. But on that picket line, they were all united, and they were all united in that righteous fight of against a multinational corporation who was trying to do the things that you were saying, take their health care away, lower wages, you know, all this stuff that I think should bring us together. And in that case, did bring those people together. And it's kind of the genesis of why I thought this tour was a good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And we got to have this tour connected to work, because unfortunately, productivity has been driven so high in this country that people are spending more time at work than they ever have before, forced overtime. And in a lot of people in conditions where they don't know when they go to work, what time they're going to get to go home. Can you imagine trying to plan your life around healthcare and taking care of the rest of the things that you have to do as a family? Or how about just the basic things of being able to do a load of laundry? Holy cow. You know, this is insane. Productivity has been driven through the roof. Wages have remained flat or gone down. We were treated as disposable during the pandemic, making it very clear what the corporate elite thinks of us. And it's time for us to fight back. I was looking at our union contract, the very first union contract for flight attendants. And I just testified in U.S. district court hearing or trial to try to make sure that the sick leave law that was passed in Massachusetts applies to aviation workers. The airlines are arguing, oh, you can possibly understand our business. And if you allow aviation workers to take sick leave without fear of discipline, then people are going to abuse it outrageously, and we're not going to be able to run the operation. This is such an offensive argument that they made. And I was there as a witness for the Commonwealth, defending the law and defending the right to implement this for aviation workers. And, you know, this is the way that businesses are operating. They have done everything they possibly can to try to take everything from us. In that very first contract in 1946 for flight attendants, we had an 8-hour day. I testified in Boston just the other day on this. Today, we have commonly 15, 16-hour days domestically. That's double what it was in 1946. That's just flight attendants. That's happening all over this country. Are we getting paid more for that? No. We're making up for losses that we took in bankruptcies where our pay was cut and workers were willing to say, I'll work more hours. I'll be willing to work more hours. So they got it out of us almost willingly by saying these are just the conditions now, and conditioned everyone to be in that place. What I like to say, though, is that they have conditioned us to work so hard that we're going to make their butts hurt now, because we're going to use that conditioning to go one day longer, one day stronger than them when we come together and strike their asses and take back what's been taken from us. Our ability to take sick leave, our ability to take vacation, our ability to work an 8-hour day and then go home and be with our families and have a living wage for all of that, and the ability to retire with dignity. So these are the common things that we have to fight for. These are the common issues that any worker can identify with, that you're going to be having conversations about everywhere. And people are going to see they're not in it alone. They shouldn't have to feel badly about the fact that they can't make things work and they can't bring their lives together. This has caused also more broken marriages because, you know, the financial stress and strain and the time away. All of this is just degrading our daily experience and our quality of life. And it's time to stand up and say no. And when we talk about these things together and understand that we have these common struggles, defining the problem is more than half the way to solving it. Because when people really understand there's a problem, then we start to get solutions and we start to get to what we're willing to do to get those solutions
fixed. It comes back to a question I keep asking. Do we work to live or do we live to work? And, you know, sadly, we're moving in that direction where we're living to work, where, you know, I look at what happened with the railroad workers, the conductors and those folks and the lives that the corporation expected them to lead just to make a decent living. And I go, that's not the direction we should be heading.
Rick, can I just want to detour here for a second, because I want to give the railroad workers huge kudos. They would not have even gotten to a process where they got recommendations through that presidential emergency board that were even as good as they were. So let me set that aside. And I want to really applaud them and applaud their solidarity and their demands and their push, and also their efforts to get politicians in place who would actually support moving that process forward. That took a lot of work. And frankly, President Biden made sure that that process would move forward. But I want to be really clear. The Railway Labor Act gives the right to strike to workers, to railroad workers and airline workers. It is very rare, though, that rail workers and airline workers can actually exercise that right to strike, because there's a whole convoluted process that has been put in place over the last 50 years that sends this through DOT. It sends it through all kinds of other screenings about whether or not we can actually get to that strike. So I think that railroad workers and aviation workers need to get together, needs to start planning for the next freight rail negotiations, the next big 125,000 people this affected. And this is about the rights of my members as much as theirs. And there is the right to secondary boycott under the Railway Labor Act, even though our right to strike, getting to our right to strike, has been had cold water thrown on it over the last 50 years. If we really organize and push that and say that we're not going to, they didn't change the statute. Congress did not vote to change the statute. We have the right to strike under the statute. And railroad workers who are on for 14 days in a row should not have to beg for sick leave. This is outrageous. We can be a lot more strategic in this country. Imagine if the railroads and the airlines all stopped together. This stuff would be fixed before we could hit one shoe on the streets. So this is the kind of coordination that labor needs to do. And this is what I'm actually hoping to inspire in these conversations, that you're going to start on the ground up through the grassroots and through this small town tour that you're working on. But I want to start to encourage this conversation around the country and in a strategic way for labor everywhere.
No, and next year when UPS and the freight companies' contracts come up, it's the same kind of coordination.
It's the same thing. We need to have the same kind of strategic conversation. And I know the Teamsters want to have that conversation. I know Sean O'Brien wants to have that conversation, and we're going to have it.
I'm looking forward to it. But this is the reason you're one of my favorite guests. I love that. So last question I've got for you. In looking at the future and looking at the moment that we're in with all the organizing that's going on, you've got to be fairly hopeful, but you've also got to be kind of looking at the fact that when the Fed and the powers to be slam the brakes on the economy as they're doing, that it's got to be you that they're going to blame, right?
Oh, I mean, they already are. They're already talking about the lazy workers who won't come to work. it's incredibly outrageous. It reminds me actually of the extreme situation after Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico, when they were saying that the reason that they couldn't get the goods out to people is because the lazy truckers wouldn't come to work. Well, they were stuck in their homes that had been destroyed. They were trying to take care of their families. The roads were covered with debris. They couldn't get to work. We have to take control of the narrative. And the only way we do that is by joining together. And you're exactly right. They're coming for us. They're going to blame us. They're going to get back to you. You should feel lucky to have a job. And we have to keep in our minds, no, it is time that we push back every single time and make them feel lucky to have our work. And making them feel lucky to have our work means resolutions. It means the ability to have health care. It means the ability to have sick leave and vacation and to make a living wage and not have to live 2 and 3 hours away from our jobs, whether that's by air or by land. And so, these are the things that we can demand when we understand that we have that power together to do that.
Yeah, and this is why I think that we're embarking on in this tour, I think, is going to be exciting, an opportunity to talk about the things that should unite us and hopefully not the things that divide us.
And Rick, I do want to say one thing that's really important. I don't think that we should underestimate where we are and the kind of gains that we've been able to make because President Biden is in office, because Jennifer Abruzzo is running the NLRB. Previously we had decisions that were completely stamping out labor, not upholding any rights at all. And let me tell you, I would like to see President Biden take more risks. I would like to see him call Howard Schultz to the White House or have the NLRB demand that there's a national bargaining order for Starbucks. That's what we should be demanding, a national bargaining order for Starbucks. But the fact that President Biden in his first month in office came out and said that it is that what the law says is that the government is supposed to encourage unions. That changed the narrative. And I have to tell you, I mean, I get choked up about this. When you have leadership leading the way and saying that this is the right thing to do, most people want to do the right thing. They want to follow the rules. And when you have people saying that it's the right thing to join unions, it is powerful. and it makes a difference. And we have Delta flight attendants coming up and saying, you know, for 20 years, the company has told me that if I sign a union card, I hate Delta Airlines. And I'm hearing from the Democrats that that's not true. And I'm a Democrat or I'm a progressive. And so I'm going to sign a union card. That makes a difference. That kind of commitment and that kind of conversation makes a difference. Now, we can do more, but we have to do more. We have to make them do more. So President Biden has us on the right path here and is creating a situation where people can actually work to exercise their rights. But if we really want to make the most out of this, we've got to ask for more risk taking, and we have to work ourselves to build that power to push them to do even more.
Amen. Sarah, as always, incredible talking to you. I appreciate the time. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Rick, and good luck on the road. We'll be with you in spirit everywhere, and maybe we'll even show up from time to time.
Fabulous. Our good friend Sarah Nelson. Make sure you check out their website, afacwa.org. We'll get links out on social media how you can do that. Quick break, back here from the road. You want to check out what we're doing? TheRickSmithShow.com. That's where you find it. Right back. This is the best of The Rick Smith Show. We're taking a break during the holiday season, wishing you and yours the very best holiday ever. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1932. That was the day the state militia was called into Kincaid, Illinois. 164 high school students had just walked out of the classroom, declaring themselves on strike. They were protesting the school board's use of coal from the Peabody Coal Company. The students walked out in solidarity with their fathers, who were on strike against the Peabody coal mine in nearby Langleyville over wage concessions. The father-son strike, as it was referred to, was one more in a series of protest actions that came on the heels of the founding of the Progressive Miners of America a month earlier. Thousands of Illinois miners had just voted with their feet to repudiate John L. Lewis's UMWA over wage concessions. After their founding conference, new PMA leaders began aggressively organizing non-union mines. They marched into mining towns and ordered non-union diggers out of the mines. They also struck UMWA mines picketing against the industry standard of $5 a day that had been set by the latest concessionary contract. At some mines, the PMA was able to win the old $6.10 a day wage. Throughout the month, the State National Guard had been called out to a number of mining towns to quell armed conflicts between PMA and UMWA supporters. The Peabody coal mine in Langleyville had been shut down for months by ongoing PMA-UMWA conflict. Now it had reopened under heavy National Guard protection and was the only mine operating in Christian County. The striking fathers were PMA miners picketing the continued mine operations under the UMWA concessionary contract. The years-long Illinois mine wars had just begun. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
One noisy piece of the GOP's culture war bunkum is critical race theory, a little-known field of academic study examining racism's central role in shaping our society. But lately, kooky right-wingers have seized the phrase, claiming that CRT is a left-wing mind-control plot pushed by diabolical school teachers. They shriek that schools are using critical race theory to program children to hate white society and replace it with unchristian multicultural rule. That's not what CRT is, nor is it even taught in our schools. But that hasn't stopped power-hungry witch hunters like Florida's Ron DeSantis, Greg Abbott of Texas, and, witchiest of all, Donald Trump, from actually issuing executive edicts banning schools from teaching a subject that, hello, they are not teaching. So, how did such a non-issue rise to the tippy top of the Republican political agenda? Fake news. For the past few years, thousands of articles have run declaring that CRT is infiltrating public education. They've appeared repeatedly in the Houston Republic, San Francisco Sun, Chicago City Wire, and dozens of other local papers from coast to coast. Never heard of these dailies? That's because none of them are real, local, or even paper. There are just a few of some 1,300 hyper-partisan websites owned and run by Metric Media, a bogus news fabricator. These fake news sites spew out a gusher of articles trumpeting the big lie of massive CRT conspiracy. This is crazy BS that's causing real extensive harm. Teachers are being fired, school board members are literally being assaulted, and school kids are being fed raw ideological ignorance. This is Jim Hightower saying the real crisis is not in our classrooms, but in the collapse of real local newspapers that produce real journalism.
This is the best of the Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So one of the things we've been talking about as we embark upon this tour is what happens to communities once that factory, once that glue that held the community together goes away. What happens? What happens to the workers? What happens to the small businesses? What happens, well, to the schools, everything? What happens? Again, we're in this place where, bad policy, bad investment, bad leadership, all of this stuff ripples down, and who pays the price? Well, working people do. That's why I've asked Fred Redmond to come talk with us. Fred is the Secretary Treasurer of the National AFL-CIO. AFL-CIO.org is their website. Fred, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thank you, Rick. Good to be with you, man.
So we're embarking upon this tour where we're going to communities across the mm-hmm. Midwest here, where factories have gone, jobs have gone, communities have been broken. And what it's led to is lots of drug abuse, broken families, all kinds of negative things that brought us Donald Trump in 2017 and this massive division. And I looked to someone like you who lived basically this story in the metal shop that you worked in for many years.
Well, thank you, Rick. Look, this is a story that has to be told, and I commend you for lending your platform to the voices of workers that's been devastated throughout the industrial Midwest. So thank you. But look, I went to work for an aluminum mill 38 miles outside of Chicago, small town called McCook, Illinois, right off of Interstate 55 and First Avenue. And, the plant came into existence in 1948. They made weapons for the war. It was a fully integrated aluminum mill. We had a cast house. We casted aluminum from raw materials, from alumina, iron ore, and we took materials out of the ground. And that's what manufacturing is about. We took materials out of the ground and produced the product, okay? And we rolled aluminum. We had a cast house. We rolled aluminum, and at its height, the plant employed 2,800 people at one time. And we made automotive body sheet. We made wing skins for McDonnell Douglas and Boeing. We made space panels for the NASA space program. We made panels for the space shuttles. And it was a fully integrated plant that really provided a lifestyle, okay, for those 2,800 people that worked out there and their families, that moved them into the middle class. But besides that, Rick, the plant that I worked out, just like the story you're going to find as you embark upon your tour, okay, it also sustained a community, okay, around McCook. I'm talking about villages like LaGrange, Brookfield, and, that whole southwest corridor of Chicago. And, everybody from the barbershop, to the supermarket, to the grocery store, to the restaurants, okay? This facility really, really produced a good product, but also sustained a community.
Yeah, and it was part of the identity, wasn't it? I mean,
It was part of the identity. People in that area, they knew the Reynolds Aluminum Plant. I mean, it was a place where, folks could go in. The concept, Rick, which I know you've heard of, 30 and out pension, it wasn't just a smokescreen, it was reality. You go in there, if you work 30 years, you could retire with full pension and healthcare benefits for the rest of your life, And I mean, this is what people went in there for, to reach that American dream. 1998, something happened, okay? Private investment guy came in, formed the LLC, got some real estate partners from Michigan Avenue. They branded themselves Michigan Avenue Partners. Didn't know anything about industrial manufacturing. He looked at my facility and a couple of other aluminum facilities he bought merely as toys, something to play with, something to experiment with. And it all came at the cost of these workers as he went bankrupt in 1999. And the company, you know, went into default. And, you know, the thing about this, Rick, is when that company went bankrupt, and this educated me a lot on the bankruptcy laws in this country, the workers were unsecured bankruptcy, was you know, unsecured, you know, in the whole bankruptcy process. It was unsecured creditors. The light company, the gas companies, the corporations, the taxing bodies, they all got their money, but workers lost health care benefits. They lost their pensions. Their pensions went to the PBGC. Okay. Workers lost everything from vacation entitlement that they had accumulated over the years. And it was a devastating story. The problem is, okay, the industrial manufacturing policy in this company, in this country, has been broken for years. And we see situations like that that's taking place all throughout the industrial Midwest in America, where communities have been devastated, small businesses have been hurt, and workers have seen their so-called piece of the American dream just dwindle.
Right. And okay. This is why, Fred, I go back to 2016 and the rise of someone like Donald Trump. And I understand the anger. Yes, there was racism. Yes, there's homophobia and misogyny and all of those things. But I argue that a big portion of the anger that people felt, especially in small town USA, was that pride to the past, like at Reynolds Metal, that those jobs that were created, that built a middle class existence that were just wiped away. And nothing replaced it but broken families and drug and alcohol abuse and all kinds of negative things. Trump was trying to recreate a dream, recreate this pride of the past. Now, granted, we both know, and I think we both know, that he didn't have a plan to do it, was never going to be able to do it. But people bought into it that he could bring that back.
No, look, I think that's true. I think, you know, look, the 45th president of the United States was a con man, okay, who came in the office, you know, selling hope to people who was hopeless because of the devastation that was leveled upon them by no fault of their own, the loss of manufacturing jobs, the destruction of communities. And he came in the office and he sold himself as a businessman with a business plan that was going to fix America. Little did we know, and, you know, you covered all the points, you know, besides being a misogynist and a racist, you know, he was also a person with no values, with no concern about the communities that showed up to vote for them. But he convinced the American people, okay? He convinced the American people, the people in the communities that you're talking about, Rick, that with his business knowledge, so-called business knowledge, and he brought in, and he was going to bring in the expertise that America had never seen before. And then the workers that we're talking about, a lot of my members, you know, they looked at it and said, why not? I mean, the Democratic Party, you know, been in power for, you know, many years, but still we saw the devastation of American manufacturing. The Republicans, you know, didn't come forward with a manufacturing plan that was going to restore jobs in America. So now here comes this new guy, okay, from New York City, the apprentice, you know, the guy who allegedly done so well in business. You know, he came and he was just that. He was a con man. And I think he conned the American people that he had the answers to their problems. And, you know, we still have devastation in this country.
Right. But the one thing, Fred, that I do agree with is he hit a nerve, and a nerve that I think Democrats and politicians had better listen to. And that is, people are hurting. People want to recreate that prosperity of the working class of the past. And it starts with manufacturing. And, you know, I look at you and stories like yours. What happened to those workers? What happened to your coworkers? What happened to your family members who worked in that facility once it was gone? What happened to that community once the factory was gone? What happened to it?
Well, a lot of them, lost hope. You know, they lost hope in the beauty of America working for them. Okay, so now you take that, Rick, okay, hopelessness, and then you combine that with economic devastation, okay, because those sort of jobs and those sort of benefits are not available or were not available when them jobs went under, okay? And then you take that with, you know, people looking for some sort of dependency, okay, because they have been emotionally devastated. That's why we had the exasperation of drugs in these communities, you know, and opioids and these sort of things, because people felt hopeless.
Yeah.
Now look, I mean, Rick, it was, and then when you couple that, okay, with issues of white supremacy and racism. I mean, look, I mean, white folks never knew, you know, look, I'm, you know, people would say it, and I had some of my good white brothers explain to me, okay, this wasn't supposed to happen to me. I did everything that I was supposed to do. I went to, you know, I got my high school diploma. I went through the apprenticeship program. Okay. I went to work every day. I worked the overtime, you know. My kid, in my spare time, I coached Little League. I did everything that I was supposed to do, and this happened to me in America. Okay, so what we saw was, when you couple that devastation along with the concept that, you know, this isn't supposed to happen to me as a white middle-class worker in America, okay, you know, then it caused this devastation and hopelessness amongst people, where, you know, what we saw is, and what we're continuing to see today, is the devastation of the middle class in this country. And, you know, what we're seeing now is a uplift, okay, in terms of workers. But, you know, what we have to ask ourselves is, you know, can we recapture a manufacturing policy here in America?
Yeah, and that's it. You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Fred Redmond. He's the Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, AFL-CIO.org, their website, if you want to check out the work that they do. If you want to follow us along here on the tour, thericksmithshow.com is where you go to do that. You can also email me. Let me know what you think, rick@thericksmithshow.com. That's an interesting frame that you've thrown out, because, look, I grew up believing that frame. You work hard, you play by the rules, you get ahead. And for far too many people, that's not been reality, especially over these last, you know, 30, 40 years of neoliberal trade policies, supply-side voodoo Reaganomics, and bad policy. Right. But I see us at a moment, Fred, and maybe you'll agree with me, that I look at Joe Biden, while not my first choice for president, that I think the policies that they're moving on, investing in infrastructure, reshoring manufacturing, investing in future technologies, and yes, talking about strong unionization, that's the path forward. And this election's about something more than just the R's and the D's. This is about a pathway forward. I'm curious your thoughts.
Well, I that's exactly right. Look, I think we got the best spokesman for working people in the White House today under these circumstances. I mean, the things that Joe Biden have done, starting with the American Rescue Plan and, you know, just going down the list with the infrastructure bill, with the, you know, with everything that he have done under a lens of putting workers first. Now, is the policies going to, you know, sustain, is going to rebuild manufacturing? You know, I think that it has a good, I think that we have a good shot here, Rick, in terms of rebuilding manufacturing, but I don't think manufacturing as we know it. I think when we see the alternative energy sector come into existence, you know, the strength of manufacturing is going to rest in the whole concept of electric vehicles. It's going to rest in the construction of windmills and solar panels, okay? And these are jobs that are online today, okay? But they don't pay the benefits that the steel jobs, the auto workers jobs from the 60s and the 70s and the 80s paid. So this is a prime time for unionization, because as manufacturing, as we know it, is being rebuilt throughout America, okay, then this is a golden opportunity for the workers to rebuild the labor movement, right, and to, you know, make sure that the
it's an excellent point. But, you know, the reality is, and I think our listeners understand, you know, those good union jobs that my grandparents' generation fought for,
right,
of the 50s and 60s, those weren't great jobs in the 20s and 30s. They only were made good jobs by unions fighting for better wages, hours, conditions.
Absolutely.
So any job can be a good job. It's just we have to make sure that they're union jobs.
Absolutely. And we're seeing that, Rick. I mean, we're seeing that. I mean, all you have to do is look at the NLRB in terms of election protection. It's off the roof. They can't keep up. You know, more and more workers in this country is filing for elections to try to organize unions in this country. You know, we see everything from tech workers from Silicon Valley is standing up saying enough is enough. You know, we see and then, you know, workers like Starbucks and, you know, the whole retail sector, you know, is standing up saying enough is enough. And Rick, it even go as far as 2 weeks ago, we signed up our 58th affiliate in the AFL-CIO, the Major League Baseball Players Association. I mean, you know, these are workers who understand, you know, the concept of team fighting and, you know, what it's about. But what they're seeing is in their industry, and we look at ball players as millionaires and stuff, for the most part, a lot of them are, okay? But they're seeing the disrespect, okay, amongst the owners that's causing them to really, really stand up with the labor movement in terms of solidarity and to become affiliates of the AFL-CIO. So there's an emergence in this country. And I think COVID brought along a lot of this, you know, as workers were, you know, identified as being essential. And then we saw in places like Kellogg's and John Deere, as soon as they go back to the bargaining table, you know, as we started gradually coming out of COVID, it was treated like it was disposable. You know, and we see employers trying to make up the resources that was lost during that period of COVID on the backs of the people who woke this country up every morning and tucked it to sleep at night during the worst healthcare crisis in our history, during that period of time. So it's about respect, Rick. What we're saying is not just a fight about wages, okay, but a fight about respect on the job, paid family leave. Okay, we're seeing workers standing up for, you know, to have redress on the job, to have grievance procedures, and to have safety and health on the job. As we see more and more workers, whoever thought, Rick, in our lifetime, that we would see one of the main issues of school teachers, the issue of safety and health. You know, when they fear every day they go into their classrooms, you know, they fear for their safety.
Yeah, no, you're right.
This is a reemergence. This is a moment in time as we rebuild this labor movement.
So the last question I've got for you, as the newly elected Secretary Treasurer, along with the new president, Liz Shuler, you guys have a mass organizing plan to go forward. This is the moment to do this. The union approval rating at its highest. What's the plan forward?
Well, the plan forward is we're putting in place what we call our Center for Transformational Organizing. And what this is going to be is a center of gravity, Rick, that all affiliates of the AFL-CIO are signed on to. You know, and what we're going to see in the future is we're going to see public sector workers coordinating, organizing, private sector workers standing with, you know, building trades, standing with steel workers and AFSCME workers, private sector workers standing with other workers, okay? But this is about a realization in the labor movement, Rick, that a rising tide lifts all boats. You know, during the Amazon campaign in Bessemer, we had 30 unions who sent organizers to Bessemer, Indiana. The question around the AFL-CIO table today is not, are these workers going to belong to my union? It's about how do we unionize these workers for whatever union they're going to join, how do we pitch in?
Yep.
Okay. And try to help get these workers get a contract. So there's a new energy out there, and we're moving this program aggressively, and you're going to be hearing a lot about it, because everything we do within AFL-CIO is going to be, even our political program is built on an organizing strategy.
Well, the hope is you'll come back and you'll share more thoughts as this continues and grows, and we can help be part of getting people to get those union cards and the benefits that I myself have benefited with over the last 30 years. Fred Redmond, I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Rick. Happy to be with you. Look forward to talking to you soon.
Good stuff. Fred Redmond, Secretary-Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Tell us what you think. If there's something along the way that's got your attention, I want to hear it. rick@therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Quick break. Right back. Tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at therickSmithShow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. As we wrap up day one of the Working Class Heroes Tour, getting ready to get out on the road, and I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited about spending some time with my good friend, Brett Pransky, the producer, the professor. Brett, thanks for doing this with me, buddy.
Hey, no problem. Glad to be here.
Now, like, you know, during the break, we were talking about, you know, going into places that, you know, some mainstream media has gone, you know, they make pot shots into. Recant that for us.
Well, what we were talking about was the fact that these kind of factory towns and, you know, working class neighborhoods that we're going to be visiting over the next 30 days, it's not that these places have been entirely ignored, but they've mostly just been paid lip service, especially by, you know, the major media outlets out there. So every year at election time, you may see some, you know, some corporate media talking head with a $500 hairdo sitting down at a local deli or a local dive bar for 20 minutes, you know, talking to a couple of people. And then they get on the plane, hop out, and, you know, and pretend that they've just represented these folks. And it's just not true. And, you know, and honestly, you know, people are tired of the lip service. And again, this is what we do every day. It's what we do every day, all day. These are the folks we represent all the time. It's what the entire show is built around. And so it's really great that we get to go out and meet them where they are and do these things that, you know, that some of the $500 haircuts do, but actually do them in a more genuine and realistic way, and talk to the people, you know, on the ground about these issues, because they're just so important.
Yeah, my haircut's $16, $25 with tip. So that's the high bar for me.
My wife cuts my hair.
You know, my mother used to cut it with a bowl back in the old days, so there is that. But I'm excited about the ability to get out and start talking to people, and I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time. It's, you know, it's almost one of those things where you're kind of waiting in the starting gate. It's like, I'd get in the truck right now if it, you know, if I wouldn't be sitting somewhere, you know, waiting for the first event to start. We'd already be on the road. So it's kind of one of those, you know, we're waiting for somebody to open the gate so we can start the sprint.
Yeah, and tomorrow Allentown, we'll be in Allentown, Pennsylvania, sharing some thoughts from there. I'm excited about what we're going to find in all of the places that we're stopping. We've got folks in those places saying, "Hey, we're gonna present to you our town. We're gonna show you what it is. We're gonna show you what it was, and we're gonna talk to people who are on the ground." And I'm excited by what the folks who we've coupled up with are gonna share with us.
Yeah, and you know, starting off in Allentown, quick shout out to the local Teamsters there. What is the
773.
Thank you very much to Teamster 773 for hosting us in their hall where we're gonna be conducting interviews and you know and talking to these folks. And it's that kind of collaboration that we're receiving all across the country from radio affiliates and union halls and you know, county party headquarters, and these are the places where we're setting up shop, all over the states that we're visiting. And the people there are so excited to see us that the roster is filling up. You know, we're going to be talking to all kinds of people. We're going to have more content than we know what to do with. So make sure you're staying tuned because there's going to be a lot of great stuff coming.
And most certainly, we want to hear from you. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com, because ultimately, we're going to go where people are. This is the great part about firing up the RV and loading up all the recording gear and getting out on the road, is that we're going to be nimble. We're going to be out on the road, getting to be able to talk to people. And to me, that's the exciting part. Final thought, Brett?
It's going to be interesting to be in an RV for 30 days. You know what I mean? I think I'm kind of wondering if we're going to make it out. You know what I mean?
You're listening to The Shaw. WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.